It's Wednesday and time for a weekly discussion of the latest in state politics with the Dakota Political Junkies. Joining the program today is Jonathan Ellis, reporter and columnist for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. And Jonathan, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Carl.
Also with us on the line is Rapid City Journal Enterprise reporter Seth Tupper. And Seth, thanks for joining us this week as well.
Thanks for having me.
Well, last Friday, Supreme Court ruling legalized same-sex marriage in all 50 states. In 2006, voters in South Dakota approved an amendment making same-sex marriage illegal in the state. But following the high court's ruling, State Attorney General Marty Jackley said that same-sex marriage is now the law in South Dakota. And Jonathan, do you think that any problems could develop in the state with people opposed to same-sex marriage?
I don't know if problem is the right word, but I think that, you know, there certainly will be resistance to the Supreme Court ruling on some levels. I think more likely what we will see is probably social conservatives across the country sort of develop, some ideas on how they want to confront this issue from their perspective, and, you know, we'll probably see some things in the legislature. I would expect, for example, and there was a bill in this last legislative session that sort of flew under the radar, that would have actually discontinued licensing by county clerks for marriage, and it was sponsored by Representative Steve Halgard here in Sioux Falls, and I think Representative Halgard, and during testimony on that bill, explained that, his belief that what the state shouldn't be involved in licensing marriage in the first place, and going back to a time back in the early statehood days and the Dakota Territory days where people, you know, got married in churches and simply filed certificates with the clerk of courts or with a clerk in their county. So I think he was trying to revert back to a system that didn't involve licensing. I think you'll see that more than likely, and I haven't talked to Representative Halgard about this, but more than likely, I think now that you've seen the Supreme Court ruling, you will see that bill reintroduced as well as some other bills that will come up.
Seth Tupper, do you foresee any resistance or legislation that could come up in the next several months?
Well, I would have thought you would have heard more about resistance popping up, you know, the day of the ruling. And things moved, you know, at an incredibly fast pace. I remember coming into the office here in the morning right away, hearing the ruling was out, and then within a couple of hours, Pennington County here was issuing marriage licenses to a same-sex couple. So, things seemed to go pretty smoothly, and I think that was the result of, as you mentioned, Attorney General Jackley and Governor Dugard and others setting the tone that although perhaps they didn't agree with the decision, that they expected people to follow the law and to abide by the ruling. And so I was mildly surprised that there wasn't more resistance that arose immediately to the issuance of licenses, but maybe it still will as things spread around the state, but we'll have to wait and see.
Jonathan, were you surprised at all by that?
That there hasn't been more?
Immediately after the ruling.
Especially because the ruling is expected. I mean, you know, going back, obviously the court took the case a while ago, and we knew that there was going to be a ruling. Usually when they hit the end of June, now we have all these big rulings. So we knew there was going to be a ruling, and I thought, you know, the way the court had been trending in this issue over the years, that it was very likely that this was going to be the outcome. So I think, there was quite a bit of other, resistance and in other states, but it was certainly more muted in South Dakota.
Well, moving beyond that, former South Dakota U.S. Senate candidate Annette Bosworth is scheduled to be sentenced today, this afternoon, I believe, for election law violations. Jury found her guilty of 6 counts each of perjury and filing false documents. Seth Tupper, does it seem likely that she will receive any jail time?
I don't know. You know, I really don't have any inside information on what the sentence will be. There's been a lot of talk about this case, and my feelings on it have always been that, she apparently committed a crime. There's no dispute about that. Her only defense has been, to my recollection, that either she didn't mean to or didn't know she was committing a crime or whatever the defense was. So there is, of course, talk out there that, with Attorney General Jackley, positioning himself to potentially run for governor or even maybe for U.S. House if Kristi Noem runs for governor, that maybe there's some kind of political motivation behind this, that he's sending a message to the to the sort of the rabble rousers in the party and tamping that down. I don't know if anything like that's in play, but of course he's got the ultimate defense of, well, I'm, you know, somebody committed a crime and I'm enforcing the law. So I don't know. I would you'd have to guess that maybe the sentence would be, you know, on the lighter side, you know, of what's possible given this, you know, this isn't a crime that most people would deem as a crime against humanity or anything like that. But I don't know. I mean, obviously, we'd have to wait and see until the sentence comes down.
Her supporters have said that she's being persecuted while others have done the same thing and haven't had any problems. Jonathan Ellis, does that seem like a fair characterization?
Well, I think that if you ask people who are involved in politics, that frequently petitions are circulated around at whatever their fundraisers or meetings, and it would be impossible for the people who sign that they saw that they collected those petitions, that it'd be impossible for them to have actually witnessed the collection of those signatures. So if you talk to people involved in the process, it's extremely widespread. Okay, but you know, on the other side, I mean, the documentation against Annette Bosworth was pretty obvious. I mean, she was out of the country I think it is widespread, and I would hope that, you know, they address this issue. I know that former state lawmaker Laura Hubbell has pointed out that, you know, there's, in her opinion, and I think she makes a valid point, that what the state law says is that people need to verify that the signatures, and she's in her contention that, you know, that using the word witness and when you sign those petitions as a circulator, that's more than what state law requires. And so, I would expect that this will probably get addressed by the legislature.
Seth Tupper, does it seem like there's confusion over election law regarding the collection of nominating signatures? This, what does it mean to witness a signature?
I don't know if there's confusion so much as maybe just not much attention has ever been paid to it by the, you know, the broader population until now, and it's just not something that people give a lot of attention to, and you know, that's, I guess that's maybe what's fueling a lot of the gripes about this prosecution, is that it's something that hasn't a lot of times risen to the level of something that, you know, demanded the attention of the Attorney General, for example. So I don't know if there's confusion so much as just it's just kind of something that is not in the everyday realm of most people, and not something that gets a lot of attention a lot of times, and suddenly it's become a big issue.
Well, as long as we're on the subject of elections and petitions, there were a couple of successful petition drives to refer youth minimum wage and election reform measures to the ballot, and in a little bit we'll talk with Corey Heidelberger, who sponsored the petition drives. But first, Jonathan Ellis, these measures, how controversial were they with voters? Is it a surprise that this was a successful drive?
Well, yeah, you mentioned Corey Heidelberger and the Annette Bosworth issue, and then these petitions, he's at the center of all of this. Going back to the Annette Bosworth thing, of course, I mean, you know, he filed a formal complaint after he and some of his people documented the fact that she was out of the country. So there was a formal legal complaint, which I don't think has ever happened before, with regard to these nominating petitions. But now, going back to the referred laws, I mean, they were certainly controversial in certain quarters. You know, one of them would have the objection on the election package was that independent candidates would only be able to get petition signatures from registered independents, which would have really created a big barrier for independent candidates. And some people looked at this as, you know, a result of, you know, you had Larry Pressler and Gordon Howey running as independents, and so some people thought this is the party establishment, the Republican Party establishment, trying to weed out competition. So that was very controversial. And then, of course, the youth minimum wage was controversial because voters had just enacted a minimum wage. And I spoke with a sponsor of that bill yesterday, Dave Novstrup, and his point was, well, I wasn't trying to, you know, subvert what voters did, but sort of add to it. So anyway, it's an interesting issue. But yeah, they were controversial.
And Seth Tupper, in looking at these two referred measures, it looks like the youth minimum wage pretty much cut and dry. The election reforms, however, that's a little bit more intricate, a lot more going on there. Do you think that'll have supporters of that, of the referred law, I should say, I guess they would vote no on that. You think getting that across to voters, what's involved with that, to be kind of confusing?
Absolutely. If you look up the legislation, it's a fairly long bill, and it's very involved, and it gets really deep into the weeds of how people are allowed to get on the ballot. And I hope there is a lot of campaigning on that, just for the public's sake, because it will be something that's difficult to understand, and there'll be a need to get information out there. And it is important, in a democracy, the process by which we allow people to run for office, the hoops we require them to jump through, that kind of thing, it's very important to the electoral process. So, I would hope that the complexity issue doesn't discourage people from learning about it and from getting informed. But there's always that danger when you've got legislation that is really complex that you're taking to voters.
Jonathan Ellis, do you expect some lively campaigns with these two referred measures?
Probably more so on the youth minimum wage, because there was some business support for that, for creating a youth minimum wage. And Seth is right about the other one, the election deal. It does get into the weeds. And frankly, it kind of addressed some serious issues, but they kind of got too, people involved in this got a little too cute, really, frankly, with regard to the independent candidates and with regard to, making, new parties, third parties have to jump through different hoops. And so they got a little cute in their bid to sort of, I don't know if they want to preserve their power or try to eliminate competition or whatever. Now they're stuck with this referral. And so, hey, that's what the referral process is for.
Well, moving on, the South Dakota Board of Geographic Names decided 4-1 to keep the name of Harney Peak. The name Hinhankaga, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, was under consideration. And Seth Tupper, why did the board vote to keep the name Harney Peak? And I imagine that me not being sure of how to pronounce that Hinhankaga is probably part of what the reason why they voted against that name.
What they've said is they've referred to the sort of the backlash against that name because the board voted just last month unanimously to support that name, and here we are a month later and they voted 4-1 against it. During that time, there was, I think, about 400 written comments that were received, and a lot of them were negative against the name, but a lot of them were also in favor of it. So that's been the stated reason. You have to think that politics played into that a little bit, in that in the time between the first vote and the second vote, two members of Governor Duyard's cabinet came out publicly and filed letters opposing the proposed name. And the governor himself didn't take a public position. But the members of this board are all appointed by basically their own department heads. I mean, they're rank-and-file members of various state departments. So you have to think that when those sort of rank-and-file employees of state departments on this board see that cabinet secretaries are against something they voted for, that's going to have an impact. So that hasn't been stated, but you have to wonder what impact the politics of the issue had on it, and sort of the pressure that was felt from the top when a lot of people came out against this proposed name.
Well, there were other names under consideration. What happened with Black Elk Peak?
Well, it's still on the table, believe it or not, because the state board finally recommended that the Harney Peak be retained. The citizens petition in favor of Black Elk Peak that started it all, that's the name that will be considered by the National Board on Geographic Names. But all indications are that they give a lot of weight to what the state board recommends, and it doesn't appear that there's much of a chance at all that that the U.S. board will go against the wishes of the state board, and likely Harney Peak will be retained and will have gone through months and months worth of this kind of for naught.
Jonathan Ellis, is it important that we at least have the discussions about changing the names of some of these sites in the state, like Harney Peak, which refers to someone who perhaps has a somewhat of a less than clean record, I guess, Mr. Harney?
Well, I've done some research on General Harney, and there's certainly, I mean, he was a respected general in his time. I mean, he was doing his job, as a general back in the 1850s, and as an officer in the Mexican-American War. I mean, he's doing his job. I mean, it was a war. There are certainly other. I mean, point out that General Harney was also a peace negotiator on treaties, and some of the things I read about him is that he was very frustrated with Congress for not necessarily honoring some of the treaties that he was involved in negotiating. So it's a mixed record. And there are other individuals, for example, on my climb list. I'm trying to climb all the 14,000 feet peaks in Colorado. One of them is Kit Carson, and Kit Carson was you want to talk about somebody with a background, bad background with regard to Native Americans. It's Kit Carson. So, I mean, we have these talks, and people feel strongly on both sides about them, and I don't think that the issue is necessarily going to go away.
Well, while we're out talking about the Black Hills, about 825 Rainbow Family Gatherers have arrived out there. I guess more people are expected to come over the next few days. The gathering has resulted in some controversy from different Lakota groups. The United Urban Warrior Society is protesting the gathering, wants to evict the campers. Other Lakotas are supporting the Rainbow Family Gathering. Today is the first official day for the gathering. Seth, you've been following this story. Has there been any trouble yet today that you're aware of?
Really not, between the Native American activists and the campers out there at the Rainbow Gathering site. The last I heard, there were some Native American activists kind of at the turnoff near Deerfield Lake, where you go out to the gathering area. But I hadn't heard of any physical confrontations or tents being torn down or anything of that nature. So it does appear, though, that the activists, the Native American activists, may have had a big impact on attendance. And, of course, with a group as loosely organized as the Rainbow Family, you never know exactly who to believe and what to trust. But it appears that some of the Rainbow Family are off doing regional gatherings in other states because they chose not to come here in order to honor the wishes of some of the local Lakota people who didn't want them here. So the attendance estimates for the gathering here have been dropping and dropping and dropping, to the point where yesterday they said a day before the event started there were only 825 people here, when a few weeks ago we were talking about the potential of 20,000 people coming to the Black Hills. So it's debatable how much of an impact the sort of the controversy had on that, but obviously the numbers are far lower than what was originally considered possible.
Well, finally, a rail bill passed by the U.S. Senate and co-sponsored by John Thune would give more regulatory power to the Surface Transportation Board. I guess at first it would seem that that's unusual for a Republican senator to support more regulation. Jonathan Ellis, why is Senator Thune in favor of this bill? Why is he sponsoring this?
Well, yeah, I mean, at first glance, Republicans typically want less regulation, right? But with regard to, if you're a Republican from an agriculture state and there are certain things that the government can do, whether it's regulation or programs that help agriculture, then you're going to be in favor of them. And what the Senate bill does is creates more membership on the Surface Transportation Board. They attempt to resolve issues faster. I mean, there were some issues with regard to grain not being able to be shipped because rail cars were being diverted for oil or whatever. So, I mean, this would allow them to resolve those issues, and that's probably to the benefit of agriculture, and that's why you see Senator Thune supporting that.
Do you think it'll make it through the House?
Nothing ever gets done in Congress, right?
All right. Well, that'll have to do it for the Dakota Political Junkies this week. Jonathan, thanks so much for joining the program.
Thank you.
And Seth, thanks for your time as well.
You're welcome.